Hi, everyone. Welcome to New Mexico in Focus, the podcast for Monday, July 10th, 2023. I'm Lou DeVizio. We're going to do something a bit special this week on the podcast, so get ready for a few different episodes dropping this week and next. You may have seen on social media, we just aired the first installment of a two-part series on the state of journalism in New Mexico. It's something we've been extremely excited about, and we've poured a lot of time into it, and I want you to hear it all. That starts with two in-depth interviews with key figures in the state's journalism ecosystem. Executive producer Jeff Proctor sat down with the new top editor at the Albuquerque Journal, that's Patrick Etheridge, to ask about his plans for the state's biggest paper, and Jeff also caught up with a man who owns four papers of his own, Albuquerque City Councilor Pat Davis. Today on the podcast, you'll hear Jeff's entire interview with Etheridge. Then on Wednesday, you can check out the full sit-down with Councilor Davis. And on Friday, we'll close out the week with two panels made up of veteran journalists analyzing the status of news media right now in New Mexico. I promise, I'm about to get into the headlines as usual, but I want to make our intentions clear. We did not pursue this to pat ourselves on the back or to create a conversation that would only serve journalists themselves. We wanted to take a look at the industry with the same critical eye that we use each week to analyze government and other societal concerns. And of course, we want you to let us know if we succeeded. So please send us your feedback on any of our social media pages. For now, let's check the headlines. The New Mexico Supreme Court is affirming a Public Regulation Commission decision rejecting a proposal by the state's largest electricity provider to transfer shares in a coal-fired power plant to a Navajo energy company. The court also held up the PRC's decision to deny PNM's request to issue bonds to make up financial losses from abandoning the Four Corners power plant in northwestern New Mexico. Navajo Transitional Energy wanted to take over PNM's shares. The group said that preventing the plant from closing early would help soften the economic blow to communities that rely on tax revenue and jobs tied to coal-fired generation. State courts have the right to rule on whether a legislative map has been gerrymandered, strictly for political reasons. The New Mexico Supreme Court also issued that decision last week. The justices kicked the issue back to a district court judge in Clovis with instructions to consider a claim from the state GOP and others alleging legislative Democrats redrew the boundaries of the state's more conservative 2nd congressional district in a way that would entrench Democrats in power. For their part, Democrats argue the maps were a policy matter that fell under the purview of the legislature, which they control. Patrick Etheridge is the new vice president and executive editor at the Albuquerque Journal. It's long been considered the state's paper of record, but we rarely get to hear from newsroom leadership about how the publication functions. That's why we were so excited when Mr. Etheridge agreed to sit down with our executive producer, Jeff Proctor. In a 28-minute interview you'll only find through NMPBS and New Mexico in Focus, Jeff asks about Etheridge's career in journalism to this point and how that will shape his philosophy as he leads the journal.
Patrick Etheridge, welcome to New Mexico in Focus. Thanks for coming down, and also welcome to Albuquerque.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
So we are talking in this week's show about the media ecosystem and sort of the state of journalism in New Mexico. By the time folks see this interview, you will be about a month into your job as executive editor of the Albuquerque Journal. And we'll get to your plans and vision for the newspaper here in a little bit. But I want to start with where you came from. You have worked at and led newspapers in Nebraska, Kentucky, Indiana, and all sorts of other places. And I wonder how those experiences shaped you as a journalist in particular.
Sure. So I've had ink in my blood since a very young age. You could go back even further, and I was delivering papers when I was 13 and 14, and that was a coveted job for a household, and that's one of those things that my brothers and I, we kept for a decade in our little small town we grew up in. But then more to the point, got into newspapers as a writer and have always just loved a good story. The meat of journalism, just telling a story, whether it be success in sports, watchdog journalism, or anything else, just there's a thrill and excitement that I get from just a good, meaty story. And that really has never changed. My positions have changed. I've climbed up the ladder, I guess, over the course of 28 years or whatnot. But that still drives me now, just doing good journalism and finding good stories that are important to people.
I relate really strongly to that, actually. I wonder, what were some of those newspapers like in terms of size and circulation and the way they served the communities where they existed?
Sure. So every good newspaper, I think, is somewhat a mirror of the community that it serves. So from that, the communities were vastly different. I started out in a little weekly newspaper as a very young cub reporter back in Nebraska. That's a conservative farming part of the country. And the newspaper really mirrored that. So I went from that to Iowa. Iowa, not as conservative at the time. I went on to be able to cover the Iowa caucuses. Covered the closing of Maytag, which was in Newton, Iowa, which was a huge deal. We saw a town that really thrived on these 3,000 people working in a factory and all losing their jobs within a matter of a year.
Echoes of that in the 2016 presidential election,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and mm-hmm. just decimated mm-hmm. an entire town. And then it really became politicized, right or wrong, folks used that. But covering the Iowa caucuses was great. And because of Iowa's political makeup, all of the presidential candidates cruised through there, so that was a lot of fun. But then from there, I took a management position on the Iron Range of Minnesota. If you know anything about the Iron Range, it's very much, they call it DFL, is the political driving force there. A completely different dynamic again, and the newspaper reflected that. And really, that's been the case everywhere I've been, and I think it's very true here as well, that a good newspaper is really a good reflection of the community that it serves.
Yeah, and I want to unpack this question a little later in the interview, but let's take a little bit of a stab at it now. This is a state, of course, with a majority Hispanic population, a minority white population. The politics here tend to range from like super deep blue to very weirdly purple. How do you plan to make that reflection that you were just describing happen? How do you do that?
You know, I think the number one way to do that is by hiring good, unbiased journalists. We all have different backgrounds as journalists, as people, but a good journalist, somebody who really takes it serious, their background doesn't necessarily matter. They approach subject matter unbiased without any preconceived notions, and I really think that we have a team with that kind of dedication to the craft.
How much did you know about Albuquerque? How much did you know about New Mexico? And how much did you know about the Journal when you decided to start to go down this path?
I have to be entirely honest, very little, mm-hmm. especially about Albuquerque and New Mexico. Actually, even when I came down here to interview, and it was a few-day process, I didn't get to see the mountains because we started the interview first thing in the morning, and the interview ended, and it was dark as I was meeting people, and I was a little disappointed because I didn't get to see the mountains. Now I can read everything online. Obviously, I'm a reader based on my career, so I could read about the politics and the demographics, and so I knew it from that standpoint. I was really, honestly, more interested in the Journal at the time because that's where I'm going to spend so much of my time. It was very important to me to meet a lot of the staff and to get to know the history of the Journal. So that's probably where I invested all my time.
Gotcha. What sold you on coming here?
Honestly, first and foremost, Bill Lang and what the newspaper has done, the makeup of that paper. I think that Albuquerque and the entire state is so fortunate to have a paper this size, these kind of journalists, and a family that's been that dedicated to serving. I come from corporate newspapers, a long line of them, and still grateful for all the opportunities I've had. But sometimes the papers like that, there's almost a sacrifice sometimes of the product. And here, I feel like the Lang family and the staff as well are very dedicated to a top-notch product. And in a modern era of journalism, sometimes that gets pushed to the side plate, and I don't feel like it has here.
Yeah, I think the notion of a family-owned newspaper is still romantic and attractive in a lot of ways.
It really is.
Digging a little bit deeper, sort of beyond that notion of newspaper as mirror, I want to talk some about your journalism values and philosophies. What kind of from 30,000 feet or from 2 feet, whichever you prefer, choose your own adventure here. What is a newspaper's role in a community?
Well, I think that that's really multifaceted. I think there's a lot of things that a newspaper has to do for its community. Obviously, there's a watchdog portion to that that should never go away. It's, you know, it's key to the invention of newspapers, the creation and the existence of newspapers. We have to be the agency that is watching tax dollars, making sure that our elected officials are being held accountable. That will never change, and I will hold steadfast to that. On a weekly basis, we talk about that. Are there things we need to involve lawyers in? Are there things that we perceive to be going on that are wrong right now with our local officials? And I think that news consumers should always expect that. That will never change. We won't budge on that. But there are other things. You know, I think a newspaper can help celebrate accomplishments in its community, whether that be sports, whether that be, pride parades, really, just all the things that happen in a community that make it special and that people in that community should be proud of. I think it's incumbent upon us to help celebrate those things. Now, another portion that I think that newspapers and all media do, but could do better at, is really affect change. I feel like we are, as journalists, influential. And shame on us if we don't use some of that to bring problems to light. It's not necessarily all on our back to make those changes, but to at least make the awareness, to let communities know, let influencers know, this is a problem. And I think that that's a thing that all media should do more of. And I would intend for the Journal to do more of that.
The old saw of an informed electorate makes better choices at the ballot box, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So for as long as anybody can remember, the Journal has positioned itself as a newspaper of record. Sort of the New York Times model of all the news that's fit to print, right?
Right.
But on a local scale. Should readers going forward expect that of the Journal, or do you have a different idea in mind for that idea of if it happened, it didn't really happen unless it went in the Journal? Is that what we're going to see going forward?
So I appreciate the question, because honestly, that's something that we've discussed. We've pondered, and not to great detail yet, because I've only been here for a minute, but very true. I mean, do our readers expect us to be the state newspaper that reports on things that are happening 3 hours away, but it's still New Mexico? And I think the answer is yes. We will continue to do that because I think our readers expect it, and it's important. I don't think that we can always rely on, well, somebody will pick that up. At some point, you just have to do it yourself to make sure that readers remain informed. However, it's equally important to me that we are a community newspaper. I don't want there to be news happening in Albuquerque that we miss because we're covering something 3 hours away. So there's a fine line there, and I can't tell you that I have that all figured out yet, but I want to be both.
That's really encouraging to hear. Yeah. So going a little bit more into the weeds here, and I appreciate your willingness to engage in some of this. Your two predecessors in the executive editor job, Karen Moses and Kent Walls, first of all, full disclosure, this does not come as a galloping shock to any of our viewers. I worked at the Journal from 2003 to 2013. It's still a really important institution to me in a lot of ways. So fair game for me to just say that out loud. Anyway, Kent and Karen both were very hands-on editors. In particular, for stuff that went in the A section of the newspaper, they had their hands-on copy. I wonder, and again, I know you've only been there a month, what kind of editor should we expect for you to be from that perspective? Do you plan on having your hands in the pie?
Again, a great question. That's something that I've been having a lot of discussions with my staff, even though I've only been here for a bit, because I don't take that approach. I don't believe that the executive editor is necessarily best served as a line editor on a daily basis. I think that I have some very qualified journalists, a number of very qualified journalists, who have served this newspaper and our readers for a very long time and are more than capable of doing a lot of that. I see myself more as coming up with the direction that we're going to go, saying that this is where we're going to go. And then really, I'd like to empower my staff. I've never worked with a group of journalists as skilled as this, as experienced as this, and as capable as they are. So that's really what we've been talking a lot about in my first few weeks here, is just, I trust you. You know what to do. At this point, you know what to do more than I do. I've only been here for a minute. I'm still learning the processes, and I'm still learning the names of the people in the newsroom, frankly. Yeah. But I would expect in the coming months that for my staff to hopefully feel very empowered and know that I'm not going to be looking over their shoulder for all those details. I think that as the modern era of journalism dictates, we do less with more. It's going to be very important that they know they have the ability to go out on their own and do more of the things that they're qualified to do. And I think we have to learn to operate more efficiently that way, because our number one priority will always remain good journalism, keeping meat on the bone, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So the best way to do that is to be efficient.
One other question about process. And going back to, again, both of your two predecessors, they both had a tremendous amount of involvement, both in content on the editorial pages, including staff editorials, and in the news operation. I wonder your thoughts on that philosophically. Do you plan to have more of kind of that traditional separation of church and state, or do you see yourself kind of overseeing both aspects of the operation, opinion and news both?
So I do. I will serve on our editorial board. I will be part of that process on a regular basis. And in terms of content, I'm really looking forward to starting to write a regular column of some sort. That's not all going to be hard news, let's be honest. A lot of this, especially as I get acclimated and introduced to the area, there's probably going to be a lot of me writing about just how amazed I am at some of the Albuquerque-isms and things that are just brand new to me. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, eventually you're going to probably see me opine a bit more. And I believe that myself or any other journalist worth their mud can share an opinion and still also be unbiased when it comes to the news side. I think that separation is possible.
Let's talk about the website rollout. I know this is going to be an interesting topic for a lot of folks. We've watched that over the course of the past couple of weeks. One consequence of that has been that everything pre-2020 is not available on the site. I will lament that personally, because that means all of my work is now stricken from the obelisk. And in addition to that, the morgue, the hard copy, the clip archive is not open to the public anymore. I wonder, are there any plans to sort of restore this incredibly rich digital and analog record of the first draft of history that stretches back more than 100 years in our state?
So obviously we've retained that. We still have all of that, obviously. When it comes to stories and archives of that nature, we've partnered with newspapers.com, which will still have everything from the beginning of time. You can still search through all of our stories that way. Photos, we still have an archive that we can easily pull things up. Unfortunately, yeah, the ability to just dump everything back into the new website, it just wasn't possible, the bandwidth that it would take, and just some of the details that are really over my head as well, I don't understand, but they just said it just wasn't going to be possible. And then we just looked at statistics and we kind of let some numbers drive that. Anything over 3 years old, that's less than 5% of our online traffic. Yeah. So at some point we just had to cut it off. But I too lament not having that all at our fingertips, because it's really nice for reporters or anyone doing research to do that. But I would encourage anyone who's looking for those old stories to go to newspapers.com and you'll still be able to find it.
Gotcha. Beyond the challenge that I just mentioned, how do you feel like the rollout's gone so far with the new website?
I'm glad you asked. Finally, a question that I'm so excited, because I think it went really well. I come from the company who actually owns the product that we just switched to.
Yeah, Lee, right?
Yeah, so I'm familiar with Town News and specifically Blocks, which is what we call it, and it's a front-end system for reporters as well. It's really easy to operate. Most important, it doesn't break very often at all. It's very reliable, which is why over 2,000 news sites in the country use it. Mm-hmm. I think that Blocks, which supports our website, supports something like 35-36% of the news sites in the country right now. So it's reliable, relatively user-friendly. Users can follow the writers that they want to and just see their stuff. You can easily click on just local news or just local sports if that's what you want. But it does a really good job of offering more. You know, there are seven stories that you'll see across the top, whereas the old one, I would test it, and you could sometimes only see a couple.
Two or three.
So if nothing else, it gives more options for a reader, I think. And it rolled out. The rollout, I thought, went fantastic. The staff here, I thought, did really, really well. For it being something that they hadn't done before, and I've helped roll this system out at several other papers within the corporation I came from, I told the staff here that I thought it went as smoothly in Albuquerque as anywhere I've ever seen.
You know, it created some humorous moments on Twitter, too, where everybody had this sort of mass freak out of, oh, my God, the journal got sold to Lee.
Right.
And I'm watching my boy Matt Rise. I'm like, hang on. Nope, that's not what happened. So
right.
that was fun to watch along.
As he is with all breaking news, Matt was on top of it right away. And yeah.
So the item that announced your hire in that ran in the newspaper sort of described a mix of skills, watchdog journalism, which we've talked about a little bit, and some tech savvy, right? It is, after all, the year of our Lord 2023, and we're not just bundling news and tossing it into people's driveways anymore. One of the things that really stuck out for me was a quote from you in that item in which you talked about the Albuquerque Journal is not going to be offering squirrel videos, which I read with some delight. That said, I am a regular consumer of what goes at abqjournal.com. And of course, I noticed the green chili cheeseburger videos and stuff like that.
Right.
So I wonder, what is the threshold for you in terms of something that you do think serves readers, does drive traffic, and then just straight up clickbait? Where's that line?
Right.
So as I have learned when I moved within the first few days, is that folks in Albuquerque, they don't joke about their chili. I've been asked a lot, am I a red or a green person? And I still don't know. But that seemed worthwhile just from that standpoint. And honestly, also, we've got a team of journalists who do need to play with this and expand. And I was so excited to see something like that because it's a test. Clickbait has become a bad word. At its heart, what clickbait means is people are clicking on it because it's something that they want to consume.
Yep.
I don't think that that's bad. We've coined it clickbait, and it has a negative connotation, but I don't think that that's justified.
Thank you, BuzzFeed.
Yeah. But I guess what I would tell you is what will drive what we do is if people are interested in it. And that's the great thing about the digital age, is that we can see if this has 10,000 people who read it, then it might be important. Maybe we should do more of it.
Yeah.
If it has 200 people who read it, maybe it's not as important. And that's what I love about modern journalism is you have those stats right away. So we can
feedback, right?
We can tell right away, this is a stinker. Let's not do this again.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about sort of the staff at this point, right? Yeah. An awful lot of institutional knowledge and memory has walked out the door just in the last couple of months. And I mean with Karen Moses, Dan Herrera, Elise Kaplan, some of the other reporters, it reminds me a little bit of kind of what happened back in 2013 where there were a lot of folks who'd been there for quite some time. I wonder your thoughts on how important that sort of institutional knowledge and institutional memory are at a newspaper like the Journal.
Sure.
I think it's important for any newspaper, the Journal especially. You know, Karen was very gracious in that she gave a long running warning to everybody that she was leaving and really did a lot to prepare folks, did a lot to help me as well. We got to spend quite a bit of time together and still now we're in communication. Because this is her baby as well. You know, she doesn't just retire and not care about it. So that's been really great. Some of those other, you know, Elise, I had met Elise when I came down and interviewed and was crushed when I heard that she was leaving because I think she's a fantastic journalist. What I'm encouraged about is that that institutional knowledge was here so long that a lot of it has really rubbed off on the team that's still there. You know, Elise really helped Matt become the journalist that he is. And I think that he's carrying on that mission seamlessly. And I think that you have a lot of examples of that in the newsroom. And those names that you mentioned are still brought up almost daily because I think that the team is really devoted to carrying on that work. And I think that they are capable enough that the loss of that institutional knowledge is really minimized because they're so committed to the craft and carrying it on.
What are your staffing goals and plans? What can you do? Are there gaps that you're already starting to look at, kind of making some hires? And then what's your sort of recruiting plan there? Are you looking for experience, young folks? How do you repopulate the Earth?
Sure, that's a great question. I don't know. no, all jokes aside, we're currently hiring for a night cops reporter because that's one of those pressing things that you just have to have.
Indeed.
We have a national search going on right now for a city editor. I have an interim city editor, Gabrielle, who's fantastic, a great journalist, been there for a long time, but she wants to do some other things within our newsroom. So we're going to reach out in that. Beyond that, a lot of folks have asked me that, especially my own employees, and I can honestly tell them, I don't know yet what positions that we need to fill because I still haven't got a full grasp on the operations. But I do fully intend to bring some new people in. And when I approach that, I want the best journalists, the people who are going to help the paper get stronger. That doesn't always mean that they'll agree with that I'll agree with them, but you don't want yes man either. You want people who are dedicated to the craft, like I feel like I am. But there's more than one way to accomplish that. So I can't tell you exactly what I'm looking for. It's a combination of everything. It's a combination of experience, attitude, willingness to embrace the digital era, but also strength in traditional journalism. But at the end of the day, if I had to just measure it with one category, it's do they make us stronger? Do they make us better?
Yes, folks, seem unlikely. Patrick, journalists are obstinate, persnickety folks. So as I'm sure you know, as well as I do doing this for quite a long time. I wanna ask another question. The Journal has historically, at various times in its history, had a really difficult relationship with communities of color. Obviously, you are not responsible for any of that. All of those things predate you, but I'm interested in how much you are aware of that. And if you are starting or in a conversation now about how the newspaper might more consistently serve all New Mexicans.
Sure, I am somewhat aware of the issue, and it's concerning. I would tell you that it's top of mind as I look for new hires. I would love the opportunity to diversify a little bit more. I think that would be really key to moving forward in the right direction. Other than that, I feel very comfortable with the staff that we have and that they are devoted to improving upon that. And I'd like to think that our work will show that in the future.
I appreciate you answering the question. One of the things we're addressing in this special that we're creating about the news ecosystem is ownership. So I'm also interested if you are aware of any conversations or any plans in which the Lang family might be talking about selling the newspaper, or if you're confident that readers and this community can continue to expect family ownership for the Journal.
Sure. I'm gonna take a drink before I answer.
Absolutely.
I would tell you that if I thought there was any threat of the Journal being sold in the near future, I would not be sitting here right now. It's something that I asked about. It's something that I talked with Bill Lang and his son Pepper Lang about in great depths. And they are committed to me at this point, but really to the entire state, to continue this great mission that their family has been carrying on. And there are no plans and no discussions to step away from that or to sell that, which is one of the main reasons that I am excited about being here and that I am here and moving my family here, because a family-owned newspaper of this size, who answers only to itself and its community rather than stockholders, I think is a fabulous thing for any journalist to be a part of. But even on a larger scale, it's a fabulous thing for a community and a state to have.
Starting to become a bit of a unicorn, right? Nationally, not enough of those left, that's for sure.
It really is. It's such a rarity that I feel so privileged to be part of that.
My last question is one that I'm asking kind of everybody who's participating in the special that we're making. And I'd like to start by sharing my perspective on this. I've been in this job now for about 3 months. And a lot of what we do here is news analysis and conversations about the news. And it has become increasingly clear to me that when the Journal is doing the thing, it makes the conversations we have at this table and the analysis that we do of what's going on in the state and the news, it makes that better, it makes that richer. It's incredibly important in the ecosystem, which is why I asked you to come down here today. But I'm curious your thoughts on that. Where does the journal fit, again, a month into this job, in the larger ecosystem of news and journalism in the state? Where are y'all in the puzzle?
I would tell you that I think we're at the forefront. I think that when you work at a smaller newspaper, you're always kind of top of mind of what the Metro is doing. You're always trying to outshine them. I'm in a new position here now where I think that we are the brightest star. I think that we have the best journalists and the most resources to be at the forefront of coverage, possibly determining what the news of the day should be, but we have the resources and we have the dedication to be the driver of journalism in the area.
I promise that was my last question, but I'm gonna ask you one more right now.
Sure.
What should we expect in terms of the future of investigative reporting? That is something that I did at the paper and have continued to do in my career. How important is that to you and how do you make it happen?
I think it's important because I think the proof is there. You can look at some of the stories that the journal has uncovered, some of the stories that we have done and are continuing to do that have really affected change, that have raised some red flags on things that otherwise maybe wouldn't be changed at all and right now are in the process of being changed because of work that the Albuquerque Journal did. That alone tells me that the work is extremely important. The journalists that are working in that are going to continue to have the resources they need to do that.
Patrick, thank you so much for coming. Good luck with the future, and let's check in again a little ways down the road and have another conversation about how things are
going. I look forward to it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks again.
You bet.
Thank you to Mr. Etheridge for talking to us, and thanks to everyone else who contributed to the podcast this week. Don't forget to look out for Jeff's full interview with Albuquerque City Councilor and newspaper owner Pat Davis. That'll be up Wednesday, and I'll have two panel discussions posted Friday. One more thing I wanted to mention about this series before I sign off here. Our goal with this is to encourage and be a part of a healthy news environment, but we cannot do that without your input, so please keep letting us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what you think we may be missing. We promise we won't stop working to keep you informed and engaged. Thanks, everyone. Please keep an eye on our social media pages. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube throughout the week. We'll be posting updates and other news items leading up to our show on Friday night. Thanks again, everyone. I'm Senior Producer Lou DeVizio for Monday, July 10th, 2023. This is New Mexico in Focus, the podcast. Have a great week, everyone.